And we're live. Welcome everybody here to your favorite day of the week. I'm Anthony Irwin, as always, joined every other Friday for The Hook by Pete Dayis of Laker Film Room, and also now of the Hoop Collective podcast. Congratulations on the gig, Pete. And,
not quite the Hoop Collective podcast.
Oh, but, yeah, that's right. Although that would be funny.
That would. Oh, I need that. I need them motherfuckers, man. Give me those dudes. You just gave me a goal in life. Now give me on Simmons,
the Laker Collective podcast. Is you know, I kind of say it out loud. That one would be really, really funny to listen to and watch. We need that one on video for Pete's lack of a poker face.
Yes, no poker face at all. Yeah.
No, all right. Really quickly before we go on, I was listening to your and Darius's most recent episode.
Okay.
And obviously, as most people know, your guys' show isn't on YouTube, but very few instances and moments in your show's history have made me want you guys to have a video podcast more. You know which one I'm talking about.
Grimes isn't smart, but blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, where are we going with this? Like, I'm like, Darius Coward.
I was like,
and
what?
I should have known that. I should have known that. It's just like the way he said it, and it sounded like a verb, right? Rather than
Yes. I was doing the lawn while I was like listening to your show. And I could just imagine what my neighbors thought of me cackling over the sound of my mower.
I was mortified. Like, where are we going with this?
Yeah, I was like, geez, I guess Darius is getting canceled. Yeah. So today on the show, we have some breaking news to go over, obviously, as about an hour or two before Pete and I went live, DeAndre Ayton was sent to Washington to play with the Wizards. And in the irony of all ironies, Pete, Rob Pelinka finally got Anthony Davis' center.
His center. God, that was my – damn it, you stole my line. I'm still going to use it later. I was cracking up at that earlier. Yes. AD gets his center.
We will talk about that AD and DA now linking up in DC. And so we will go ahead and talk about the ramifications and maybe the reasoning behind that trade, as it now leaves the Lakers with one center, one true center. I don't consider, like, Mamu is like a 4-5.
Yeah.
They have one center on their roster right now. This coming after Jackson Hayes signed a contract with Utah yesterday, a 2-year deal that is not going to be 2 years. I'm going to go ahead. It's like the inverse or the opposite of the Ryan Russillo. Like, I'm going to go ahead and predict Utah doesn't pick up that option, you know, or like, I'm going to go ahead and predict player X picks up their player option. I don't think Jackson Hayes is going to play that second year there in Utah.
Okay.
But yeah, we will go ahead and break that down. And Pete, something and you know, in that episode that you and Darius had recorded, you guys were aware of the fact that you guys, it's rarely happens to this extent that a series of moves polarizes the Lakers podcast sphere the way that this has, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, where you and Darius are liking the summer so far. Mm-hmm. I saw Trevor's reaction to the wave of moves that the Lakers were making. I guess he was live on the air when that happened. Mm-hmm. So that was kind of interesting. I don't know where he has landed now that the dust has settled. And then Jovan, by way of our group chat, I think is also kind of on my side of the spectrum here. I'm probably as usual, the furthest at this end of the spectrum where I'm like not feeling this. But I mean, like, normally though, like you and I can find middle ground. And I think that's kind of what what I'm attempting to do this in this discussion. Nobody's going to win this discussion. Nobody is going to lose this discussion.
Right.
This is going to be a productive debate over a series of moves that our favorite basketball team has made. Mm-hmm. And so that's going to be the basis of this conversation after we go over the DeAndre Ayton news. I also, Pete, because apparently all the big shows have props now, I have a whiteboard over here so that I can outline.
Do your Rich Lakers. Paul.
I'm going to do the Rich Paul. Like, all right.
It could be for Andre Drummond, though, right? We're going to be doing this for the Big Penguin. Yeah.
Yeah, it's like, this is what the Lakers need. This is no. that was wild. It was wild because it was such an immediate. Like, I'm going to miss LeBron James, the player.
Yes,
I'm going to miss LeBron James, the basketball player. I thought he did miraculous things, during his 30s and into his 40s with the Lakers. You know what I'm not going to miss, Pete?
Bro, yes. Yes.
I'm not going to miss Rich, like, having to listen to Rich Paul's podcast. Yeah. So, yeah, that's going to be, like, how this episode is going to play out. And then, as always, if you guys have questions and comments over the course of the show, we will answer those towards the tail end of it as well. As a reminder, please hit that like button. Please hit that subscribe button. Turn on notifications for the show and for YouTube so you get those notifications for the show. And then this episode is brought to you in video form by Prize Picks. Use that promo code HMA, and you can get $50 worth of free Prize Picks lineups when you sign up. Use the code and make a $5 lineup of your own. All right, let's get going. Let's get going. Let's here yes, on sir. DeAndre Ayton going to the Washington Wizards. This at a time where the Lakers, again, do not have a true backup center. Mm-hmm. And I really, Pete, this was one of those moves. I saw the Mamu move coming. That was pretty widely talked about and reported on and all that good stuff. I saw, obviously, the Kessler move. They had been trying to get Walker Kessler for like 3 years. So that one didn't exactly shock me. The price did, but we'll talk about that later. And like the Quentin Grimes move didn't really surprise me much either. That was another one that had been signaled pretty clearly. Since the onset of the summer, Sexton did surprise me, and the Lakers trading DeAndre Ayton did surprise me, even though I knew that they were trying to trade to free up a little bit of money so that they could go out and sign their hopefully starting power forward, which I think they are still in the process of trying to do. So the Ayton thing, I was really excited though about having him as a backup. I don't know how excited he was.
Yeah, was he?
Which is something that I've been kind of, hearing a little bit, like, because when they traded for Kessler, that was immediate thing. Is like, I don't think Ayton is the backup type. Like, he's not at the part of his career where he's just going to accept that role and be particularly happy about it. So I would imagine, the speculation on my part, that a conversation was had. Hey, what do you think? No, I'd rather go. And he's probably going to be the starter there in Washington because AD is going to ask for him to be the starter in Washington, and AD is going to be the starting four. And that's if AD is still there. Like, the other thing that popped into my mind is this a precursor to AD being traded to Golden State so that LeBron and AD could link up there. But regardless, the Lakers now need a backup center. They have in Walker Kessler, their like defensive anchor, big, immovable object that that I think is a part of every successful center rotation nowadays. They have their floor spacing 4/5 in Mamu, who I think is something that every team I think is going to need because of Victor Wembanyama. If you're going to try to get out of the West, you're going to have to shoot over the top of Wemby and OKC's defense and Minnesota's defense, for that matter, too, because of Gobert. And then now the Lakers, I think, like, that when the news broke about Ayton, the speculation was that they were going to target DeAndre or Andre Drummond, former Laker, old friend. Jonas Valanciunas, his name came up. And Kevon Looney, his name came up. And that was kind of the trio there. I wasn't really enthused about any of them, to be completely honest. I think those were just kind of names that get thrown out there that tends to happen here. Maybe one of those guys actually do wind up a Laker, but I think oftentimes the Lakers peruse the center market a little bit more and show a little bit more creativity than some of those guys. And personally, Pete, I texted this to you and Jovan. I would rather go out and get like a rim runner, an athlete, an actual lob threat, because for everything that Walker Kessler is, he's not quite a lob threat. Mamu definitely isn't a lob threat. The Lakers really don't employ many lob threats on this roster right now. So that would be the direction that I take this. What did you think of the trade for Ayton? I should also mention they got 2 second-round picks from Washington as well. But what did you think about the trade?
Yeah, I think the second round picks are actually the most notable part. I'm very curious what Luka thinks of Hardy. They were teammates in Dallas, and he's still only 23 years old. So I think you can aggregate his salary in another trade if the Lakers are acting as an under the cap team. So we'll see whether or not Hardy stays. If he does, I could see him as sort of the backup. I think we're starting to get sort of a clear vision of what they're going for, in that Sexton, Grimes, and Hardy are all athletic bucket getters in the backcourt that, like, they're finishers, you know. I think a couple of them need the ball in their hands.
Luke, that's Rob's type, right?
Like, sure.
He has a type.
Sure. But I do think that they're looking for, like, they really upped the athleticism in the backcourt, going from Kennard and Smart, who I love, right? And by, like, both of those guys quite a bit. Mm-hmm. It's just a different sort of change in direction, I would say. With DA going out, I had the same sort of, like, that's a really talented backup center. He'd be one of the best backup centers in the league if he's down with it. I'm curious to what degree both Redick and Luka were like, I just want this guy gone. He was probably the player I think that people got frustrated with the most, pretty obviously, on the team last year. And between that and DA's point of view, I'm not super surprised. I also, and this sort of informs the rest of our conversation for me, I'm not evaluating this team of how do the pieces fit right now, because the cake's right in the middle of getting baked right now. And so, like, obviously we need a five, obviously we need a starting four. If Mamu is our starting four to start this next year, I'm gonna be way lower on what this offseason is than what I will be if they do what I think they're gonna do and bring back Rui or bring in Kuminga, somebody like that, to actually start at the four spot and push everybody to kind of more natural places. But yeah, I'm more evaluating everybody right now on, like, how do I like this piece individually? Hardy is one of those guys that, and this is something that both him, Grimes, and Mamu are like, they can really get hot, but he's also extremely frustrating to watch a lot of times. And there's a reason why he's been sort of cast aside by a couple of teams despite his talent. So Sexton sort of fits this mold as well, as, like, talented, can put the ball in the hoop, but can also really frustrate you. So I'm more evaluating, like, the individual pieces. And I think this is a precursor move, obviously, on paper, and how it fits, it creates more problems than it solves.
Yeah. And honestly, when you put it that way, Pete, it makes a lot of sense that you would like this offseason more than I do. Because, like, I literally just made this point on yesterday's show when I was saying that, like, this is kind of a through line of Rob Pelinka's tenure, is that, like, if you look at the moves that he makes in vacuums, right? Like, if you could just, like, you know, all kids have their little lunch boxes and the apples sit there and the sandwich sits there and the dessert sits there. And if you just look at each little thing individually, you're like, yeah, makes sense. You would give up a couple of picks for Walker Kessler. That's perfectly fine. Like he's the starting center, most important Luka piece that you're going to, like, it makes sense to give up two first round picks. And that's honestly a pretty sensible salary. So that in a vacuum sealed bag makes perfectly fine sense. Quentin Grimes as, you know, somebody, a secondary ball handler or tertiary ball handler, alongside Luka and Austin. We saw him play solid defense actually in that Boston series. We've seen him, turn tides of games and stuff like that with his ability to get super hot, and his catch and shoot ability is something that makes a whole bunch of sense if you're putting him next to Luka and in that little vacuum seal bag. Like, oh yeah, sure, fine. Colin Sexton brings some lateral and A to B athleticism that the Lakers just haven't had. Like, they haven't had a guard basically since Schroeder who could break somebody off on their own without needing a and it's like, all right, that's perfectly fine. But, like, you combine the Grimes and Sexton signings and you're like,
that I'm with you there. Yeah.
You know, and so, like, that's where if, like, from your vantage point, if you're looking at this right now, it's like, I like each individual move so far. Let's see what this looks like in a couple of weeks.
Yep.
I could understand why you and Darius would like the offseason so far. My brain doesn't really work that way. So, like, I always think of everything, you know this about me. I talk about this constantly on the show. I don't consider myself a chef, but I love cooking. I love the way that ingredients come together. I love the idea of putting together the perfect bite, something that has that salt, fat, acid, heat, and all that stuff. And when I see a series of moves that have this much overlap that don't quite line up quite yet right now, I start like getting tense. Like, all right, where are we going with this? Mm-hmm. You know, where are we at? And then you combine that with the fact that before they traded Ayton, they didn't have very much in terms of right now flexibility to continue to improve this roster. That's when I really started being like, okay,
sure,
where are we going? You know, and that's where I have basically sat since that flurry of moves. It's like, I don't like this. And then also, this just needs to be said. I see the sport differently than Rob does. Mm-hmm. I just do not agree with his basketball ideology, which he and JJ, and I think by extension Luka, like they have looked at this offseason and they have built out this team with offense in mind. And
I think they're all on the same page there. Yeah. Yeah. That's a good point.
Yeah. It makes sense that three offensive minded former players or current players would look at the sport that way.
Yep.
And I am of the mindset that 2019-2020 team is probably one of my favorite assortments of talent of all time. And it was this big, strong, mean, suffocating team that by the time that they would like win those series, all of those final games, there would be like a sense of relief that those teams that they had just beaten would feel. You could see it on their bodies.
Oh, they beat them down. Yeah, absolutely.
All right. I'm glad that's over.
Yeah.
And that's like how I view the sport and how I prefer to see the sport. And that's where I just don't think I'm ever going to be fully in line with an offseason that Rob Pelinka and JJ Redick built out.
I love this point. I talked to a Lakers person after the big flurry that same day. And I told him, I was like, you know, you guys believe in a different basketball religion than I believe in. I'm very much with you. Give me two superstars and a great defense and let's rock and roll. Right. excuse me. But I told him, I was like, you know, you guys started this decade winning a championship with the nastiest defense in the NBA. And then you've spent the rest of the decade making sure that never happens again. And so, however, as we've seen over the last 8 years and with eight different title winners, there's more than one way to win a championship. And my thing is that, and I really learned this after coaching with other coaches where it's like, they're like, I think we should run 2-3. I'm like, I think we should run man. And you talk it out and then you see it on the court. That whole idea of like, okay, you know, I don't necessarily have to agree, but I want to see if you're going to go down a certain path, be the hell out of that thing. Right. And so the swing player for me is Grimes. That's the one that I probably like the least in terms of where I think they're slotted. Like, I'm not the biggest Colin Sexton fan, but if he's your backup one at $9 million, that's fine. I think we can take the guys that we don't like a little too far, that they're just like trash overall, you know? But I'm totally good with Sexton as a backup one, right? Like, I like Mamu a lot. I think he's going to become a fan favorite and he adds a dimension to the team that is at least useful, right? Grimes is a guy that I like him again in a vacuum. I just wanted a more defense forward player in that spot. However, Grimes can really fill it up when he gets going. Mm-hmm. And if you put him in situations where you set him up, and I think that Luka and Austin are probably more, despite Philly having some really great guards, I think they're Maxi and VJ are more bucket getters. Jaylen Brown's going to be there as well. That if you set Grimes, like I can see it with Grimes, you know what I'm saying? Like I'm skeptical of it, but I totally see where they're going with it. And if you can combine that with either Rui or Kuminga at that fourth spot, it gives you sort of a nowhere to hide effect across the starting lineup in ways where, like, I think they could try it, see what it looks like. I can see it working, even though it's not what I agree with. And if it doesn't, I think they can pivot off of that. You know what I'm saying? And so I'm willing to give it a shot, despite very much being aligned with your, like, give me an awesome defense and two dudes that can really go and let's try to win it. You know,
the one thing that I would push back on, though, is that, like, you're right. We have seen, you and I have joked about this before. There are several ways to skin a cat, right? Mm-hmm. And I don't know why we're skinning cats, but still there are apparently several ways to skin them. We have never seen a champion with a bad defense. Not right, bad one. And
you think this is a bad defense?
I'm very nervous about it, Pete. And it's it, I think they will probably be mostly like they will. I think they'll be below average while Kessler is on the court. And I am real nervous about what they'll be when he's off of the court. Because right now it's, you know, had they kept Ayton, because a lot of like the ways that Kessler defends is the ways that like Ayton is probably best at defending, you know, like a deeper drop and just kind of contain and then wait for people to get to you and then hope to contest and stuff like that. You don't want either of those guys switching a whole bunch. So like if Ayton was your primary backup center and you just had a pretty consistent playing style, I'd be like, okay, I don't think they'll be as bad when Kessler sits. But now your primary backup center is probably going to be Mamu. Mm-hmm. When Kessler sits, like now you're hoping that your third string center, like you're hoping that 73-year-old Andre Drummond is going to come in and anchor
He's 32. Your defense. He's 32.
Hey, in sports age, man, that's some of my favorite jokes that I'll see on like it's like the guy's like watching a British soccer game and he's like, what a modern miracle, this lad. He's 33 years old. He should be dead by now by professional athlete standards. And this guy's like 34. Like
he's right.
But yeah, I'm nervous about you know what this team is going to look like when Kessler's off the court. And then also, Pete, what if Kessler isn't, you know, like if he's hurt, what if he isn't the superstar big that the Lakers kind of slot him into? What if he is played off of the court in any way whatsoever in the postseason? Mm-hmm. Then you're just completely screwed.
Yeah.
And I just those scenarios and there not being a net for them really make me nervous. And the one thing that we have kind of learned in these postseasons is there is, I think, an answer for elite offenses in the postseason, because most of these teams have the personnel to eventually at least minimize some of a team's best capabilities offensively. And then it's like, all right, how good are you throwing your B and C and D pitch? Mm-hmm. There isn't as much of an answer for a great defense. And if the Lakers first options and if their offense is minimized even a little bit, I just don't really know what their response would be in the postseason. Now, I do think this could be like a historically overwhelming offense, depending on who they fill that fourth spot with. Mm-hmm. So like it kind of, we have to look at things through a slightly different prism. But you know, if it's brought down a level at all and you don't have the defense to make up for that, that's how series end really quickly, you know? And that's what I'm nervous about.
They need more perimeter defense for sure. I think, for me, my anxiety was much higher when we didn't have Walker Kessler and all the other stuff was true, right? Like, I know we lost Marcus and I love me some Marcus, but Kessler is a much bigger impact and getting a five that's a defensive stalwart is much more important. And I think that getting defensive talent at that spot, like, it's not super expensive, right? Between Marcus, guys like Oubre, what they signed for and whatnot, like, but they're going to need to be that sort of exception to the rule type of offense. And one of the things that I do like, and this is to the Grimes point, like Grimes, Sexton, those guys add two more guys that can really break you down off of the dribble. And there are only so many point of attack, like can contain the ball type of defenders that you can have on the court really at any given time. Right. Even the embarrassment of Richard
to be on Austin, OKC they're going to be on Luka.
Yeah. That like, if you've got a third guy that has to guard Grimes, like vast majority of time, Grimes is going to have the advantage on that. Same thing's true with Sexton, right? That I think that this Lakers offense has the potential to be one that you actually can't contain. And I do think that I think we can go too far with the defense, like wins championships type of idea. Like one of the other phrases is that great offense beats great defense. And we see this happen all the time where you play amazing defense on Jalen Brunson and then he's hit some off the back right corner of the backboard, like leaning bullshit off of, you know what I'm saying? I mean, and it's like,
we both root for Kobe, right? Like right, we both rooted for Kobe, you know, and there were some great defenders on, but that's, to be fair, that's more of like a, individual cliche more so than it is a team-wide concept, right? Mm-hmm. Like the great offense beats great defense usually is like a great offensive player pulls something out of their ass that the great defender is just like, mother, you know, like it's true. But like, I would just have a slight pushback there, but go ahead. Sorry.
No, I totally get that. And, but I suppose that I think this Lakers team has a dam breaking degree of off the dribble talent that was my gripe with last year's team is because Bron had lost a bit of his ball handling ability by last year and was more of a triple threat type of guy that if we were going to be an off the dribble type of team, we really only had Luka and Austin. And the next best guy at that was Nick Smith Jr. And there's just such a fall off there that now we've got two more guys that like, no, they're legitimately good at this. They might not be the best in the league at this, but like Sexton and Grimes will kick your ass if you put some bad defenders on them, you know? And I see the vision at the very least. And I do think that there's the ability to pivot.
Yeah, and I think that was a point that you and Darius made in your guys' show that I think is altogether fair. Like, if you see the vision, let's continue to let them fill out the vision. And I just don't see the vision is where I line up. Is that like, there are like, you must be this tall to rides across across like the sport, right? Like you need to be this athletic. You need to be this big and physical. You need to be this good offensively. You need to be this good defensively. And I'm really concerned that the Lakers fall below that threshold. And maybe Kessler steps in and he solves so many of their problems that the Lakers get to average and they are so overwhelming offensively that they're. And the other thing too, that like, I think a good point to make here, if you're trying to defend the defense is that, I think the Lakers are going to score frequently enough that their defense won't have to be in transition. So if they can keep teams out of transition, I think that'll really help too. I do think one thing that the teams are probably going to do against Kessler is try to get out and score before Kessler is back there set up. Mm-hmm. And we'll see how effectively the Lakers are able to mitigate that, right? They do have a couple turnover prone guys in Luka and Austin. And if they turn the ball over, then the game can kind of balloon, but yeah, I don't know. I do think that we do need to see how the rest of this comes together. I would be absolutely shocked if they enter a season without a power forward.
Mm-hmm. Do you have a preference between Rui and Kuminga?
Dude, I have asked myself this like 74 times. Mm-hmm. And
I see the argument for both. Yeah.
Yeah, like I compared it to in yesterday's show, I compared it to like if you're looking at your pantry and you don't have anything good to cook, Jen and I always have stuff to make spaghetti. You know, it's a nice solid meal. You know exactly what you're getting there. And Rui is spaghetti in this case. Whereas like you look into your pantry and you're like, I mean, I guess I could try combining this and that and this and make something I've never cooked before. And maybe it turns out great. Mm-hmm. Maybe we wind up going to McDonald's and that's Kuminga. I think you have a higher ceiling with Kuminga, but I think you have a significantly lower floor with Kuminga than you do with Rui. But this team needs athleticism so badly that I think I find myself more frequently picturing Kuminga catching lobs from Luka, like those baseline cut lobs that, and I think Rui is a good baseline cutter and stuff like that. But I think that can be kind of taken away sometimes because he can't get over the top of defenses.
And he's not really Kuminga's, a 1 foot jumper either. Like he is always very rigid in his finishing. Yeah.
Yeah. Kuminga is just capable of so many of those like, holy shit plays like, I think you need one holy shit athlete on a Luka team. And that would maybe be my argument for Kuminga. But also if you go with Kuminga in this spot, there's the possibility that you're like, should have just cooked spaghetti.
Totally.
Who do you prefer?
You know, all things being equal, it's Rui for me. I see the argument for both. It's crazy. Kuminga's 4.5 years younger than Rui, even though it seems like he's been around forever. He's still
because he's always in the headlines. Because God forbid anybody be honest in their coverage about the Warriors.
But, right? Sure. I'm with you on the hyper athlete type of point. I'd be happy with either, frankly. Like we're talking about. Yeah, I know when we made all those moves the other day, everybody's like, oh, we've got no flexibility to do everything else. And that's not like one of the big ideas of doing everything this offseason is that let's say you waited until next year to let go of Vando. You don't get any benefit from that. You don't get any cap space because that's when Austin's contract from a cap hold standpoint kicks in and all that. Like, that's one of the benefits of saving everything up for this offseason is that if you move Vando, if you move Dalton or Jake, Bronny, those type of guys, you actually do create space for the guys that are left over. And there are several pretty good players here. So they got to get all their work done, in my opinion, this offseason. And then just from a talent add standpoint, and then in the next transaction cycle or two, it's a, okay, we saw it, but we need to tweak this or tweak that, but they really need to add as much talent as they can now. And so I see the argument for both. I'd go with Rui, but I'd be happy with either result.
There's a gnawing thought that I haven't said on the show yet, but it's a conversation that I've had with a few people around the league. And it's that, like, so the premise here is that I think Rob and Jeannie and their people were given a 3 to 5 year window to run this thing out and prove, all right, we can lay the foundation to continue doing this forward. I'm not saying they have a hard out at 3 to 5 years, but as part of the sale, I think it was outlined and written down contractually, right? I think Ramona even reported that Jeannie continues on as a team governor for 3 to 5 years or whatever it is. And a thought that I keep on coming back to is because I could get behind the notion of, yeah, like get it all done now. Everybody is young. Austin is currently the oldest player on the team. There's going to be some organic growth, some growth through continuity, and there are going to be additions made over the course of the next, you know, 3 or 4 years too, right? By way of draft picks and other exceptions that they can sign guys to and stuff like that. So like there are ways that they can continue to improve. But I did find myself wondering, like, you know, you give up the 2 picks for Kessler, which again, in a vacuum, perfectly fine. Like if I found out some team gave up 2 draft picks for Walker Kessler, I'd be like, yeah, that sounds about right. The issue I have with it is that it was the Lakers' only first round picks that they could use this year. At a time where they still have a glaring hole. They do not currently employ a starting power forward. Mm-hmm. And their perimeter defense is well below what I'm comfortable with. I think we can both be kind of honest here. Like, we know that Rob's job was probably riding on getting the center for Luka. That was the thing that Luka's camp specifically asked for and continued to remind him, hey, you told us this was going to be the year, right? And we very quickly got the report from Wojcie that Luka's happy, which, you know, I think he better well be given that he kind of pushed for Kessler, right? And so, I find myself wondering if this was Rob firing all the bullets that he had left in his chamber, because it's like, probably might not be my problem in 5 years anyway. You know, and that's something that, like, I wish I wasn't nervous about.
I get that. I don't think that's the rationale behind it. I think it's you're doing that for Luka, right? You're converting future value into the best current team that you have. And like right now, what, Austin's the oldest dude on the team? That was one of the things when I spoke
crazy.
Yeah, like they want to, and all of these deals except for Sexton, I know they've got a player option at the end of all of them, but they're all 3 and 4 year deals in ways that, like, they want to have a group that can play together for several years. And ideally, most of these guys on the court stick together and they grow together. And then, you know, hopefully a guy like Carr or a Dupop, and you can make moves off of that. But I don't think the rationale is like, well, shit, I'm not going to be here in a couple of years if this doesn't work, so screw these future picks. It's more, what does Luka care about a 2033 first round pick if that means is the difference between having Walker Kessler as your starting center versus Mitchell Robinson? And so it's that sort of like, give me the best team that you can create this offseason now, and then make the moves off of that, you know?
Yeah. I also, I'm just going to ask you this, like, person to person. Do you think that the Kessler, the excitement over Kessler is because he's the guy that the Lakers have been pursuing for multiple years? Because if I was just to outlaw, I don't know that I am like as high on Kessler as most people are. And if he doesn't work out, then this whole experiment,
whole thing falls apart.
Yeah. Yep. It is just done. Mm-hmm. So like, do you think that some of your excitement is that like, this is the guy that, like, this is the best guy that they could get on the market? Or do you think it's about this guy, the player himself?
I think it's about the player himself. Like,
even
before we traded for him, he was the one guy that I thought would, no, he was the one guy on the market, right? But I think he's a top 10 center in the league when he's healthy. Mm-hmm. And he's like, exactly, because I'm skeptical of the Luka and Austin pairing in terms of Austin's ability to sort of be the second dude that can really give you offense and provide that. And in some ways, Grimes and Sexton are provide a buffer against that, and that you've got more guys that do that, that if Austin's off, you're not screwed, right? But for that trio to work, I thought you needed, well in advance of this, a defensive stalwart in the front court that could really hold it down at the end. Probably needed to be a five, because you also have pick and roll needs. You need somebody that's a competent role man. And sometimes you can have like a Gobert, right? Where I know he's better offensively than I think people realize, but it's somebody who's got really bad hands. Like Kessler's got good hands. You need competency at the pick and roll spot. He's a good short roll passer. So when Luka gets blitzed near half court, he can catch that pass and make the correct play out of the 4-on-3. That he just checks so many boxes to me. And he's even got like, the first little inklings of some pick and pop ability, or not pick and pop, but just space the floor. He started making threes that we might be able to go five out with him too. That my anxiety was sky high before this offseason started, because I thought the options after Kessler were extremely bleak at that spot.
Yeah.
And so it was, to me, the difference between getting a top 10 center and a backup at that spot. So yeah.
Okay. No, I it's just something that like, I've been kind of, I love the human element of sports talk. Like, I think we tell our, like, based on our reactions to various things, we say a lot about like ourselves, about like, you know, and in our reactions to Kessler, like, cause all right, it was funny because over the course of the last like 48, 72 ish hours, the Lakers offseason went from Jesus Christ, fire everybody, get everybody out of here. This sucks. What are we doing? We're going to lose Luka. Like, it went from that to, now, if I told a joke, and I even had LOL on it to signify that it was a joke. But somebody had asked, I think it was Guru had asked, you know, what scoring guard core is better than Luka, Austin, Grimes, Sexton, right? And I like quote tweeted it, and I even added LOL so the people knew that I was joking. But I said any guard group that is playing against these guys. And the reaction was visceral, where it was like, and Lakers fans, and this happens every offseason. We've been doing this long enough that I kind of saw it coming. I was wondering how long it would take. But we have now reached the point of the offseason where fans have talked themselves into a lot of this stuff. Right? And as such, they defend this stuff this offseason viscerally, and they defend this team viscerally because now they're their guys. Right. Like you and I always joke about the fact that like Lakers immediately become more valuable as soon as they're no longer Lakers. Right. Like Alex Caruso all of a sudden became an all NBA defender. Right.
Right.
And, you know, and I think sometimes the inverse can be true with fans, where it's like, you know, if we were to walk away from a trade deadline and the Lakers were interested in Mamu and they didn't get him, we'd be like, well, Mamu doesn't really move the needle anyway. But Mamu and Grimes and Kessler and Sexton have now taken an offseason that went from absolute and outright disaster to something that they are defending viscerally. And I don't know that collection of players is enough for me to get there myself. Now we'll need to see what else comes of this offseason. We need to see what this entire meal looks like when it's fully cooked, or the pie, like you're talking about, is fully baked. But the talent that they added, given the players that they said goodbye to arrive here, makes me very nervous, you know, and if this was just 2K and like LeBron and Rich Paul were like diagramming out their next destination and the Lakers were on that list, and LeBron like finally turned around and was like, actually living in Los Angeles and being a Laker was actually kind of nice, and they need a starting power forward. That sounds mm-hmm. let's do it. Let's link back up. I would love this offseason. If mm-hmm. they had gone with Marcus Smart instead of Colin Sexton, I would love this offseason. Okay.
That's big enough to swing from like, I really don't like this to like that caliber of player is enough to swing you from one to side to the next.
LeBron?
No, I'm talking about like Marcus or you're talking all of these moves. I see.
No, okay. LeBron and Marcus they are more than enough to swing this.
Gotcha. Got it.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, I would say so. Because like now you're talking about the jump from like Rui starting at the power forward to LeBron starting mm-hmm. at the power forward. This would be an outright overwhelming offense if LeBron
came back.
Was mm-hmm. just your power forward here. But yeah, I don't know. We've been talking for 40 minutes. It flew by. So we're going to go ahead and dive into, unless there's anything else that you wanted to talk about.
No.
All right. We will see what comes up after we play the most important sound on the show. All right, we got plenty of these. So, Pete, are you good on time?
I'm good on time.
If you have to jump, you, let me know.
You got it.
Matthew the Sicilian kicks us off with Pete versus Anthony, as Count Dooku once said, I've been looking forward to this. Yeah, I'm going to save the question I have for you for offline because I'm really kind of curious about something. But
okay.
Yeah. Here's the thing that I,
yeah,
no. All right. I'm just going to ask a question. Are you cool with this? So
yes,
you have been telling me about this plan for years, right? Yes. You've been telling me about like the plan to say goodbye to LeBron. And are we sure that the Lakers even want LeBron back? Like you have been talking to me and Jovan about this. You've been on top of this to a greater extent than any reporter who is out there. And kudos to you for your foresight on this. And as you've been telling me about this, my pushback has always been like, are we sure about this plan? Like, mm-hmm. are we sure? You know? Yeah. And so like, I find myself wondering, Pete, if you're as high on the summer so far as you are, because the Lakers have executed their plan versus, are we sure about the plan? Like that, I think is kind of like the foundation of your and my disagreement. I never liked the plan.
Sure.
And you like the plan, I think, a little bit more, and you've been on top of the plan more. And that's where I think the disagreement starts.
So I like that we got Kessler. I like that we got the foundational piece that I thought we needed. Do I trust this plan? Absolutely not. I don't trust these guys. And I think they belong to a different basketball religion than I do yeah. in terms of what they value and what I don't. I like the individual players that they've acquired. I don't think that this is a championship team, but I thought that the version of this team that would be able to compete for a championship or close to it this year was the one where they do all of this and then they go to LeBron after they stretch and wave Vando and shed Dalton and Bronny. They're going to create more room for that starting.
Well, they wouldn't be able to do it with Bronny.
Well, yeah, that's true. Good point. Yes. But basically,
we got it's you like two extra $1 million, LeBron. Yeah. How'd you get it? Well,
yes. And so I like this had to be the offseason that they replaced LeBron from a cap standpoint, just a very practical standpoint. And then you go back to him and be like, hey, and this is what I would have liked to see. And I think this speaks to a level of that they didn't really want him back in the first place is I think that there would have been more communication and more like, I'm sorry, we don't want to have to offer you a $12 to $15 million deal or whatever it is, but we need to be able to make it so that once you retire, we can replace your salary slot, not caliber of player, but salary slot with the MLE type of thing. And if they wanted him back, I think they would have approached this offseason kind of more hat in hand and a little bit more deferential of like, we appreciate you. We really want you back. That didn't seem to be communicated. And that's the part where I'm like, there's a lot of hubris in like, we want LeBron to kind of walk out the door. I also understand a certain level of you can't go from the one era to the next with LeBron still on the team. That I get that. And so again, I try to have objective measures prior to the off season so that it is, I don't fall susceptible to the, oh, well, these are my guys now and I'm happy about this. I wanted a guy that only Kessler checked all of the boxes that I thought was available. And I wanted to have a credible five out look. I wanted us to not have to freaking switch all the time. And yeah. I wanted a defensive wing on the perimeter. And they went a different direction on that last one, right? And I think Grimes is better than people realize on defense. But I think if he's your number one guard the ball type of guy, you run into some issues. So I also see the vision of we want to put finishers around Luka and Austin while being good enough on the defensive end, and that they got the most important part of that in that five spot. I also didn't expect them to like lose LeBron and then be done all in one transaction cycle with it. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I think that's been one of the kind of disappointing aspects of like stuff that I've kind of heard over the course of the summer, is that like the extent to which LeBron and the Lakers were ready to move on from each other is kind of a bummer, you know, like not just from the standpoint of I said this going into the offseason, I don't see very many paths, or I still don't see very many paths where the Lakers are better after this summer without LeBron than they were with him last year. And I'm still nervous about that right now. And because of that, I thought the Lakers were a little too happy. Maybe happy isn't the right term, but like they were hubris is, I think, a good term for it. Like they showed a little bit too much hubris in their like openness to LeBron just leaving, especially with the possibility that he goes and joins AD and is on the Golden State Warriors. That would suck. I don't like how that game would go, but And so like, because of that, like from like a human standpoint, like telling a human story here, I would have liked to seen that end a little bit better. And I think that the best way that it could have ended was for him to be the starting power forward on this team and continue to usher in the Luka era. I actually thought that he handled that and Luka handled that incredibly well last year.
Last year could have been so much worse than it was, bro. Like,
oh my God, dude. Like, yeah, absolutely. And so like, I actually think we're going to see a really funny version of that. If he goes to Golden State, and every single game that they lose is going to be some grand debate between Steph fans and LeBron fans. I'm pulling for, but yeah, I think, like that is the part of this that like, that would just all of my concerns about this offseason. Not mentioning the perimeter defense, but like in terms of how good this team could possibly be, like you add LeBron to it, that's a title contender. And I don't see them as a title contender right now. And I don't think adding Kuminga or Rui would make them a title contender.
I agree with that. I agree with that.
All right, let's go to the next question here from Matthew the Sicilian. I can feel your anger, Anthony. It gives you focus, makes you stronger. This is the quote from the Hulk, right? He says, like, that's the thing about me is I'm always angry. And he turns into the Hulk. Like, that's more me. Matthew the Sicilian, again, just for appreciate consistency, you, do you know if league rules will allow Rob to change Hardy's team option to a player?
Matthew's like, I just got one-liners for you guys. Like, I got questions. I'm just trying to get my takes off. I respect it.
I just picture like LeBron looking at Hardy's contract like, wait, what?
You can do that?
That's a wow. I would volunteer for a weekly colonoscopy to see Pete on Bill's podcast.
Simmons, I'm assuming. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So I made the mistake of complimenting Bill Simmons yesterday because I thought rake the Celtics over the coals in response to the Jaylen Brown trade. But apparently he continued going on and on and on a little bit more about the Lakers trading for Walker Kessler, which
of course,
you know, I shouldn't have complimented Bill Simmons. That is my bad.
That should be a kind of a steadfast rule for you, by the way, like whenever in doubt.
It's like, I always love hearing about how like hearing him get really, really angry at owners for being cheap. And it's like, here's some stuff about the ringer. Drew Gallegos writes, after these free agency days, the thing I like most was our big man rotation with Kessler DA and Mamu playing small ball Five more has to happen, right? You know what I was really kind of bummed about now that I kind of think about it? Precious Achiuwa, somebody who you've liked for a long time, would be perfect.
Oh, that's
I would love that. Honestly, I think Coloco's still out there. That kind of a player, I think. Somebody who you don't he's gonna be third string. I would prefer this player be young and continues to kind of grow into a role here. So just like a really young athlete, you know, like who was the center that I was way higher on than everybody else? And then he came back to the Lakers and he was terrible. Shoot, I forget. He was like, somebody help me out in the chat for those of you who like listen to the show frequently, but he was on the Lakers and then the Lakers let him walk and I threw a big temper tantrum and then he went to like Sacramento and was like,
good. Damian Jones. You loved you some freaking Damian Jones.
Exactly. But like that kind of mold though, like a really young center who was just really, really lob raw. All you're asking him to do is just like, hey man, go catch lobs, make wow plays, and then come back here, you know, after the 10 minutes that you're out there, and we'll bring the professional back into the game. I don't know who that player would even be. I honestly haven't looked. I saw Nick Richards is still available, I think. Or did he sign a multi-year contract? But somebody like that. He doesn't even have to be that good at playing basketball. Just be big and catch lobs.
Can I make a point real quick about that five spot? I think the names that got leaked, whether they're specific or not, what do Valanciunas, Looney, and Drummond all have in common? They are massive, strong dudes. That was one thing about the Sexton pickup. Like, I think they're trying to have the backup be similar to what the starter is, in that Austin's backups last year were Gabe and then later on Kennard, both of whom play differently than Austin does in terms of being an off the dribble type of speed attack, get to the rim type of player. Sexton's much more similar in terms of how he attacks to Austin than either Gabe and Kennard were. If you have Walker Kessler as your starting five, and then you're looking to back them up with just a strong as hell five that might not be the best lob threat, but just like an immovable object type of thing, I think that might be what they're going for. That makes me a little more skeptical of a Richards type. But
yeah,
do you go that route or do you go the, I actually want to have one strong guy, one guy that's a lanky lob threat, you know? But that was one thing that stood out to me. It's like, oh, I wonder if they're trying to go that route with that backup five spot of just like Kessler 2.0, big and strong, you know, going to dominate and all on the boards type of thing. So we'll see.
Yeah, I was going to say, like, because even if their power forward is one of Rui or Kuminga, neither of those guys are known for rebounding. And like, you know, the backups there, like, because we still don't even know who the backup, we don't know who the starter is. We don't know who the backup power forward is. Our mutual friend JD texted me before I went on the show. He was like, you said that Rob Pelinka isn't very forward thinking. He literally doesn't think of forwards. And it's like, you know, not incorrect. But I think we can probably safely say that the backup power forward that they eventually sign, or the backup wing that they eventually sign, isn't going to help much with rebounding. And those guys, Looney, most of those guys, and then Valanciunas and Drummond, Drummond, they all create extra possessions, limit possessions for the other team, which I could kind of get behind a little bit. I just don't like going into a season with Luka Doncic on the team and not having a single real lob threat center on your roster.
I get it.
Let's see. Pat Mavs writes, love the move so far. We defend very well in the playoffs last year. Actually, we just couldn't score without Luka. These moves are good insurance. We lost LBJ too. Not yet. They haven't lost Bronny Jr. yet. I joked on a radio hit, and somehow the radio host didn't get it. I was like, yeah, the Lakers have the wrong LeBron James on their roster right now. And the guy was like, I don't get it. I was like, Bronny's legal name is LeBron. I get it. So you're saying you'd rather have LeBron on the team. I was like, good.
Yeah.
Good job, bud. let's see, what do you make of that point? We couldn't score without Luka, and they've addressed that this year. Do you think that's true?
Yeah, I mean, I wish we had Luka to give sort of a better idea of at least what we need, because I think that if Luka were playing, it kind of slots everybody else into better roles. But I think this is an accurate point that they, for the most part, defended okay. And then when they really had issues, like we had no scoring off of the bench, especially that I think that this is going to be a better scoring team in that respect. That I see this perspective, you know, it's you take a little from one bucket and give it to the other, that I have some defensive concerns now. But yeah, I agree that they've addressed a good amount of that, like ability to put the ball in the hoop.
Yep. Regulation writes, when you guys talking about top offense, is that organized or breaking down the defense in the blender? JJ has his players run his system now. I think both, but really though, like I think their floor, like, you know, I know you kind of roll your eyes at the whole like organized versus unorganized offense stats and stuff like that. But I think the gap between their organized offense and their, you know, winging it offense is going to shrink quite a bit this year, because I think these guys, there's a lot more connective tissue on this year's roster offensively than last year's.
Yeah. I don't think, for one, I just disagree with the premise that a lot of the offense is winging it. I think there's far more drive and kick principles applied even in the plays that look that way. I think we're going to run less horns action, less stuff at the elbow, and more. I think this is the first time we're going to really see the system that JJ wants to run. I think we did get better in the blender in that mid play. That's always kind of driven me crazy that I think we'll be better in that. I also, losing LeBron hurts here. Like LeBron was still our best transition player and is somehow one of the best transition players in the league even still. But one of the things that really stood out to me is if you look at where we ranked in terms of just shots taken in the first 9 seconds or so, like 15 or more seconds left on the shot clock, we were way below San Antonio, OKC. The Knicks were a few percentage points ahead of us. That we just need more cheap and easy buckets, that you get some of that from defense, but more and more of the NBA trend is sideline fast break type of principles, where even off of a made basket, you outlet and you race up the sideline and you really try to get a quick bucket. And this is regulated by principles. It's not just winging it, right? But we weren't fast enough and we didn't have the scoring threats up the wing to be able to do that in ways that I felt like we just really need more easy buckets. And then in the half court, again, I think they can create a really great nowhere to hide effect, and they can go five out a lot more than they could before. That I think that's going to be more of the story rather than a like organized versus disorganized. I don't think that there are too many possessions that are disorganized in the first place.
I also think that on average with Kessler and Mamu, that was one of the things that really kind of stood out for me in the tape with Mamu, is he lays the wood on his screens. He's not a tall guy. He's like, but he's got a low center of gravity and he's kind of mean. So he really sets pretty good screens. And then Kessler absolutely smokes fools. So I'm really looking forward to that. I think they'll probably pick up like once a week, they'll pick up one of those annoying flopping illegal screens that, you know, type of things that like OKC does every other play. But I, that is something that, like I said, I have zero concerns whatsoever about the offense on this team. None whatsoever. I am honestly really excited to watch this team next year because of how good I think this offense could possibly be. I am, however, very, very, very nervous about the defense. That's we'll just see what else they do to address it. Let's see. What's the next question here? I like that. Like for a good stretch there, it's like four comments in a row. It's about Damian Jones. It's like, I love it. There are people who just like know the show. All right. Derek River writes, did you go to Esperanza? You look familiar in your name. I did go to Esperanza, class of 04. Everybody there knew me as Fred, though. Matthew the Sicilian writes, looking back, if you had to choose Kessler full max, Utah doesn't match, keep draft capital, lose some salary flexibility, or how it happened. So the one concern there is that like Utah just comes back and matches it, and then the Lakers are completely screwed. Yeah. That is probably the reason that they went with the sign and trade in the first place. But let's say that is an option and you have to say goodbye to like Sexton, I guess, in this case, right? Or was he signed to the...
He was, I think, the room exception. Room exception. So you'd have to either Mamu or Grimes, you wouldn't have.
Yeah. But would you have rather maxed out Kessler and lost one of those guys, maybe sign somebody to a lower number elsewhere, a different guy to a lower number, But hold on to your two first rounders. Would you have rather gone down that road or the road that the Lakers took?
I would rather have gone down the road that the Lakers took in signing Kessler to the deal that starts at 30.2, because again, I think that they need to acquire as much talent as they can this summer. And that includes the, whatever they're going to do with Vando and Dalton and all of that. I think that getting the talent on the front end is more important than the future flexibility and all of that, because players can be traded too. I feel like there's the discussion around this is that only for future first have any capital or trade value around the league. And I just don't think that's the case. Like, I think that, putting together the best team now, like that's what the picks are for.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think I would have gone the opposite route. But I don't think it was very realistic, because the Lakers, like, just in terms of the sheer risk involved there, right? Even if you offer him the max, Utah just says, well, we'd rather keep him and then work out our book later, you know? And then the Lakers are just like, Jalen Duren, how you feeling? Now, it does help that he isn't signed right now. So maybe they would have been able to pivot and head down this path than otherwise. But I would, like, the way that I'm kind of looking at it is they have spending power now, and they're looking to move Vando and Dalton anyway. Mm-hmm. So a first rounder allows you, like, those first rounders allow you to move those guys and acquire the player that you're looking for that would make up for the talent loss, by way of not signing Grimes. Mm-hmm. And then you also still would have like $10 million, right? Or so, $8 to $10 million in spending power if you would have maxed out Kessler, because I think his max was like 42 mm-hmm. or 43. Yeah, I don't know. I that's the path that I would have taken, but I don't think the Lakers were ever interested in that path because of the risk involved. That was made very, very clear to me over the whole process. Mm-hmm. Let's see. The next question here comes from, which I don't think, I wonder how those conversations went with Utah, where it was like, fine. Like, I wonder if there was ever like a moment where Rob would have, like, you know, the line of demarcation where Rob would have been like, fine. I don't want to give up the second first rounder for Walker Kessler. I don't want to do it. And then, like, I wonder how it would have gone if it was just like, all right, fine, we'll just sign him to a max and then we'll see where this arrives anyway.
One thing you run into danger with, though, if you do that, if you don't want to, I don't know, add Hugo Gonzalez to a trade, you might find yourself trading a guy for Giannis one day and then you trade him for Paul George the next, because you didn't want to give that one more asset because it's too much, you know?
Yeah, And like I said, Pete, if the Lakers had another first rounder in their back pocket,
I get it.
And they had given up two first rounders for Walker Kessler, I'd be like, fuck yeah, that's a great trade. This is a guy that they considered a cornerstone of their franchise moving forward. You're going to have to give up draft. Like, it's, I had our mutual follower friend or whatever, Rob, Rob Liefeld, who created Deadpool, which is a really funny thing to say. He was in my mention saying like, oh, the Rams traded all their picks and look how they feel about it. It's like, I don't care about like the Lakers using picks on players moving forward.
Right.
I care that they would have had a first rounder so that they could have addressed a different hole in their roster using that pick. Like, I'm not making the case of like, man, I really, really, really want the current 13-year-old on the Lakers, roster in 2033. That's not what I'm arguing at all. Let's see. Matthew the Sicilian writes, being two SoCal dudes, was there a place to hoop in LA that was the equivalent of Rucker Park? I would say Venice was the first place that comes to my mind.
Yeah, that's I wouldn't say it's equivalent of Rucker Park. But that was probably the place. That's actually one thing I've found sad over the last decade and a half is there don't seem to be nearly the number of pickup games that there used to be outside. Like, I think a lot of there's been a huge growth in the personal training amongst the guys who can really play, you know, and then I think most of those games are indoors now.
I think it's hurt basketball. Mm-hmm. I learned a lot playing pickup. That was always the place that I felt like I learned the most. You know, you're playing against, you know, cause I would be like, 15 years old in high school and I'd be playing against like 42-year-olds who are fully like developed and stuff. Mm-hmm. And Luca has said that like that actually really helped his development too. Right. Because he was playing professional at a really young age.
Yes.
And he was like, he understood how like he needed to utilize his leverage and the extra physicality that grown men play with.
You also have way more room to improvise and just try shit that like most of the time isn't going to work, but sometimes it does. Like, it allows you to improv, I think, a lot better on the court.
Yeah. And especially like playing outside too. Like, I think there would be less of a focus on shooting if more people played outside, because you try shooting when it's breezy outside.
Bro, many times. I grew up in the Antelope Valley, and so I would always go to Dominic Sari Park in Palmdale, and we'd have fucking – and I was a shooter. It wasn't much else I was going to do. There were some days, man, where it was brutal.
Yeah.
Double rims and shit. And
I grew up there, like, as the previous commenter said there, and I went to school there at Esperanza, and the area that I lived in, and like Yorba Linda, Anaheim area, we would get the Santa Anas that used to whip through that corridor that the 91 goes through, right? So you would just get like these gusts up at the elementary school that I grew up at, and then I would sometimes go up and shoot at, and they had the short hoop, so I used to like to go up there and dunk. But you would go up there and shoot, and I would have to aim a solid 3 feet off the target. Yeah. Right. Oh man. But yeah, you weren't shooting threes in those games. All right, Pete, I think that's going to do it here.
That was fun.
This was fun. I think it's a conversation that we're going to continue to come back to in a couple of weeks. We'll have, I think at that point, a fully fledged understanding of what this team is going into the season. This isn't like a Kawhi situation or a LeBron even situation where we're waiting for a decision. I think the Lakers are going to like hammer out the final pieces of their roster in the next couple of weeks. Mm-hmm. And then at that point, you and I could come back here and we can debate again how we feel about the team.
Yep.
Anything that you want to plug before we get you out of here?
No, man. It's fun.
All right. Thank you, everybody, for tuning in. Please hit that like button. Please hit that subscribe button. Turn on notifications for the show and for YouTube. Promo code HMA on Prize Picks. And then listen to the show wherever it is that you get your podcast, preferably on Odyssey, but I truly do not care. Have a great rest of your weekend. Please be safe out there. It is the 4th. It is this is the Friday before the 4th, being on a Saturday. I know that, like, is going to be drinking. There's going to be drinking and fireworks. That's not normally a very solid combination. Please hop in Ubers, take care of yourselves, and let's catch back up again, unless there's breaking news on Sunday. Have a good one, everybody.